Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All on mine, shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
My house had always been my retreat. It wasn't perfect, but it was all mine, a fresh chapter after leaving behind a marriage that had drained me. After long shifts at work, it was my escape, where I could finally relax, shut out the chaos, and breathe. That night, however, my sanctuary felt anything but safe. It had been a long shift, and I was beyond exhausted by the time I pulled into my driveway. I grabbed my bag, fished my keys out, and headed for the front door. But when I slid my key into the lock, it didn't turn. At first, I thought I was just tired. Maybe I was using the wrong key. I tried again, jiggling it gently, then more forcefully. Nothing. Frustrated, I stepped back and stared at the door. Could the lock have jammed? I didn't remember it sticking before. After a few more failed attempts, I gave up and called a locksmith. He arrived quickly, with a friendly demeanor. After fiddling with the lock, he explained it had likely just worn out and replaced it with a shiny new one. "Shouldn't give you any trouble now," he said. At the time, it just didn't seem like something to worry about. Things break, right? Life happens. But looking back, that moment was the first crack in what I thought was an ordinary problem. 3 nights later, I found myself in the exact same situation. It had been another late shift, and all I wanted was to collapse into bed. But as I slid my key into the lock, it refused to budge. The new lock. The lock that shouldn't have given me trouble. I just had it replaced. How could it jam again so soon? Everything looked normal, but something didn't feel right. Reluctantly, I called the locksmith again. It was a different guy this time, gruff and not as chatty. As he worked, I asked if it was common for new locks to fail. He shrugged and muttered something about cheap materials, but I could tell he wasn't convinced either. When he left, I double-checked every window and door in the house, making sure they were locked tight. My mind kept wandering back to the door, the lock, and the thought that maybe someone had tampered with it. By the time the weekend rolled around, the feeling of paranoia hadn't let up. It wasn't like me. I was usually calm and logical, but the thought of someone messing with my locks gnawed at me. On a whim, I decided to install a small security camera above the front door. It wasn't much, just a cheap model I'd picked up online, but it gave me peace of mind. If someone was messing with my door, I'd catch them in the act. The first few nights, nothing happened. I'd come home, check the footage, and see only the empty porch. It was almost enough to make me feel silly for worrying. Almost. On the fourth night, everything changed. I came home from work, my shoulders heavy with exhaustion. My key slid into the lock, and to my relief, it turned smoothly. For the first time in days, I felt a little lighter. But when I checked the camera footage later that evening, my heart dropped. At 2:13 a.m., the screen showed a man in a hooded sweatshirt standing on my porch. He wasn't facing the camera, but I could see his hands working on the lock, moving with a practiced ease. My throat tightened as I watched him remove the cylinder. When he was done, he turned and entered the house like he owned the place. For the next 3 hours, the footage showed nothing but darkness. Then, at 5:26 a.m., the man reappeared. He exited the house, replaced the cylinder, looked around, and disappeared into the night. I sat there, staring at the screen, the weight of what I'd just seen crashing down on me. He'd been inside, while I was gone, for hours. My first instinct was to grab my phone and call the police, but I hesitated. What would I even say? That someone had broken in, but nothing was stolen? That I didn't know who he was or what he wanted? My hands trembled as I dialed anyway. The officer who arrived was kind. He watched the footage and asked me a string of questions. Did I recognize the man? Had I noticed anything missing? Had I seen any suspicious activity in the neighborhood? No, I replied each time. We'll file a report and increase patrols in the area, he said. In the meantime, I suggest staying with a friend or family member until we figure this out. I decided to take his advice. I packed a bag and drove to my sister's house, but sleep was impossible. My mind raced with questions, theories, and fears. Who was he? Why had he been in my house? The answers came the next day when the officer called me back. His tone was serious, almost cautious. We were able to access footage from the neighborhood surveillance cameras, he began. We saw the man getting out of a white car 2 blocks from your house. He was carrying tools, a small bag, and walked directly toward your property. A sinking feeling gripped my stomach as I listened. The footage gave us a clear view of the car's license plate. We traced it back to the registered owner, the officer continued. He paused for a moment, and then he said the man's name. I couldn't even process the words at first. It was my ex-husband, the man who had refused to accept our divorce, who'd clung to the belief that we were destined to be together despite everything. My mind raced as fragments of old arguments and his obsessive behavior came flooding back. We believe he changed the locks as a way to manipulate your access to the house. It's not uncommon in cases like this. Hearing that he'd been so close walking through my neighborhood and inside my home, it all made me feel sick. The police assured me they'd taken him in for questioning and that I should consider filing for a restraining order. They emphasized the importance of improving my home's security immediately. I didn't hesitate. The next day, I had a professional security company install high-grade deadbolts, motion sensors, and cameras throughout the house. I changed my work shifts and made sure to let my closest friends know what was happening. But despite the precautions, every corner of my home felt violated. The walls holding secrets I didn't want to know. Eventually, I moved to a new place. My address shared only with a select few. But the fear hasn't fully left me. The sight of a white car still makes my heart race, and I catch myself triple-checking locks, even in broad daylight. If I've learned one thing from all of this, it's that ignoring small, strange signs can have big consequences. Sometimes those signs are the only warnings you'll get.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
After a long night at the bar, pouring drinks for chatty patrons and cleaning up after spills, my day off felt like a gift from the universe. I had a lazy morning planned, maybe some Netflix and snacks. Around midday, I realized I was out of a few essentials, milk, bread, the basics. So I decided to make a quick grocery run. It was a beautiful day, warm but not too hot. I grabbed my keys, locked the front door, and left. When I got back, grocery bags in hand, as I walked up the driveway, I noticed the kitchen window was open, wide open. I stopped mid-step, staring at the window, trying to remember if I'd forgotten to lock it, but I was sure I had. I always did. Maybe it didn't latch properly, I told myself. I set the bags on the counter and walked over to the window. The lock was indeed undone, but it looked like someone had tried to force it. The latch was bent slightly, as if someone had forced it open. I tried to find a logical explanation. Maybe I hadn't noticed the damage before. Maybe the wind had somehow jostled it loose. Both options sounded ridiculous, but I clung to them anyway. I did a quick check of the house, opening closets, peeking behind doors, and looking under the bed like a kid scared of monsters. Everything was exactly where I'd left it. No sign of an intruder, no mess, nothing stolen. Just the window. I locked it, bolted the front door, and tried to shake off the unease. That evening, I settled onto the couch with a bag of chips and a cheesy horror movie. I had almost managed to convince myself that the window was just a weird fluke. Maybe the lock really had been loose all along. I even laughed at the movie, shaking my head at how stupid the characters were for not noticing the obvious signs of danger. Around 11 p.m., just as the movie credits started rolling, I heard a soft creaking noise from upstairs. My house was old, and the floors upstairs were known to groan when the weather changed. But this didn't sound like that. It was rhythmic, like someone was stepping carefully across the floorboards. I muted the TV and sat frozen on the couch, trying to hear any other sound. Nothing. Just silence. I laughed nervously to myself, brushing it off as my imagination running wild after watching a horror movie. Still, I couldn't ignore the anxiety gripping my chest. I grabbed the broom leaning against the kitchen wall. It was the closest thing to a weapon I could find, and cautiously climbed the stairs. My bedroom door was ajar, the way I'd left it, and a quick look around showed nothing out of place. The other rooms were empty too. Feeling foolish, I headed back downstairs. I put the broom away, made sure the doors were locked again, and went to bed. I woke up at 3 a.m. to a sound that made my skin crawl. Footsteps. This time, there was no mistaking it. They were moving down the hallway just outside my bedroom door. My heart thudded in my chest as I sat up in bed, straining to hear more. The footsteps stopped, and for a moment, the silence was almost worse. Then there was a soft creak like someone leaning against the wall. I reached for my phone on the nightstand and dialed 911, whispering to the operator. "There's someone in my house," I said. "I'm in my bedroom and I can hear them outside." "Stay on the line," the operator said calmly. "Officers are on their way." As I whispered the address, there was a sudden thud against my bedroom door. I nearly dropped the phone in shock. Whoever was out there had tried the handle and, finding it locked, was now testing the door with their shoulder. The operator's voice kept me grounded. "Do not engage. Stay quiet and stay on the line." The thudding stopped, replaced by the sound of hurried footsteps descending the stairs. I heard the front door slam shut just as sirens echoed in the distance. Two officers searched the house while I stood in the living room, gripping a blanket around my shoulders. When the officers came back, one of them was holding a flashlight and looked grim. "You might want to see this," he said. I followed him upstairs, my legs trembling. He led me to the attic hatch, which had been left slightly ajar. A ladder was already propped up, and the officer motioned for me to climb. Inside the attic, the officer paused and pointed his light toward the far corner. "What's that?" he muttered, stepping closer. I stayed by the hatch, gripping the edge of the frame as if it might shield me from whatever was up there. He reached out and pulled something down, a bundle of cables and a small black device with an antenna. "It's a signal booster," he explained. "Someone's been using this to piggyback on your Wi-Fi." "What?" I stammered. "Why would anyone do that?" The officer set the device down carefully and looked at me. "Could be for hacking, illegal downloads, or something worse. But what's strange is that they didn't just plant it here. They've been coming back to check on it." That last part hit me like a brick. Someone had been in my house multiple times, not to steal, but to set this up and monitor it. The officer suggested checking the rest of the house for anything unusual. It was then that I told him about the open kitchen window and showed him the damaged latch. "It explains how they've been getting in," the officer said. The realization was sickening. This wasn't just some random break-in. They'd been sneaking in and out, knowing my schedule well enough to come and go without getting caught, and using my home as a base for their scheme. The kitchen window was the point of entry. It was part of their plan to use my house without my knowledge. It was only when I had a day off from work that I messed up their scheme. The officer took the device and filed a report, promising to follow up, but their reassurances didn't ease the anger and fear simmering inside me. Someone had invaded my space, mapped out my routine, and turned my home into a tool for whatever shady scheme they were running. That night, I barricaded the kitchen window with the heaviest piece of furniture I could move, a solid oak sideboard that hadn't been shifted in years. I double-checked every door and window in the house, then checked them again. I didn't sleep a single second that night, or for the next 3 nights, for that matter. Every noise outside had me on edge, convinced they might come back, but they never did. The days turned into weeks, and I think they'd seen the signs that I'd caught on. The blocked window, the new locks, or the police cruiser parked outside the house for a few hours the next day. Maybe they decided it wasn't worth the risk and moved on. The police followed up a few weeks later to let me know they hadn't identified anyone. The device didn't lead to any solid clues, and there weren't any usable prints. The case was closed, but my peace of mind was shattered. It's been months, and I still can't walk into my kitchen without remembering how easily my home had been turned into someone else's hideout. I installed motion sensors and an alarm system that texts me every time a door or window opens. I called a locksmith to replace every lock in the house, and a tech-savvy friend helped me secure my Wi-Fi network. I changed every password I could think of, even ones that seemed unrelated. It's overkill, maybe, but I don't care. The intruders may have moved on, but the paranoia they left behind is here to stay. Was I just unlucky, or is someone else's house becoming their new base? Either way, I'm not taking any chances again. The thought of someone treating my home like their personal workspace wasn't just creepy. It was infuriating. The officer insisted it was part of some common hacking scheme, but a darker possibility kept creeping into my mind. They hadn't been after my belongings. They'd been after turning my own home into a tool for their purpose. I still check every window and door obsessively before bed. The sound of footsteps might not haunt my memory, but the idea that someone could come and go as they pleased in my home does. And the thought that they could still be out there, finding another house, planting another device, it's something I'll never stop thinking about. It was back in 2018. I'd been living in my little house for just over a year by then. It wasn't perfect, but it had character. It felt like home. Most of my evenings were the same. After teaching all day, I'd settle in with a cup of tea and tackle grading papers or lesson planning for the week. The quiet was comforting, a welcome contrast to the constant chatter and chaos of a classroom. But one night, as I sat at my desk marking assignments, I noticed a subtle sound, almost easy to miss, a dragging noise, like something small brushing against the drywall. Initially, I didn't overthink it. Older houses have their share of noises, creaks, pops and groans were nothing new. I assumed it was normal, just the house settling or maybe the wind pushing against a loose window frame. But the next evening, it returned. This time, it was more like scratching, as though something was trying to claw its way out. Living alone had always felt empowering to me, but moments like these remind you how unnervingly loud silence can be. Still, I reasoned it was mice. My home wasn't exactly pest-proof. I'd had a few run-ins with spiders and the occasional rogue cricket. The thought of mice didn't thrill me, but it wasn't terrifying either. The next day, I made a quick trip to the hardware store, grabbed a few traps, and baited them with peanut butter, setting them in corners where I thought the scratching might originate. The traps stayed untouched. A week passed, and the scratching only grew louder. It was always in the same place and around the same time. It would start after 11 p.m., usually just as I was drifting off. I'd lay there, staring at the ceiling, listening to that sound in the wall. Sometimes it stopped, only to start again just as I was beginning to relax. One night, as I was brushing my teeth, Luna, my tabby, darted from the bathroom to the hallway. Her ears were pinned back, her tail puffed like a bottle brush. She froze halfway down the hall, staring at the wall near the coat closet. "What's wrong, girl?" She didn't move. She just stared, her body low to the ground, as if she were ready to pounce. A sudden scratching noise broke the silence, and she hissed before bolting into the bedroom. I followed her lead, locking the door behind me that night. The next morning, I called an exterminator. He was a middle-aged man who introduced himself as Bill and had the kind of calm demeanor you want in someone inspecting your home for creepy crawlies. He poked around for nearly an hour, inspecting the attic, the crawl space, and the corners of the basement. When he came back, he shook his head. "No sign of mice or rats. No droppings, no nests. You're sure about the scratching?" "It's loud enough to wake me up," I said. "Could be squirrels in the walls," he offered. "They can slip in through a crack in the soffit. I'll set some humane traps just in case." He left with a promise to follow up, but the traps he set remained empty, just like mine. The scratching continued. One night, it became unbearable. It wasn't just scratching anymore. It sounded heavier, like something was dragging itself along the wall. The noise moved from the living room toward the hallway closet. Luna, usually oblivious to anything that wasn't her food bowl, perked up and started growling at the wall. This time, I couldn't ignore it. Grabbing a flashlight, I pulled everything out of the closet, piling coats, boxes, and shoes in the hallway. I stopped breathing when I noticed the outline of a small door at the back of the closet, blending seamlessly with the paneling. I'd lived in this house for over a year and never noticed it before. I found myself rooted in place, staring at the door. It was about 2 feet tall, with no handle, just a thin gap where the panel met the wall. "Okay," I said. Using a flathead screwdriver, I pried the panel open. The musty smell hit me immediately, thick and damp, like old wood and mildew. I shone the flashlight inside and nearly dropped it. The crawl space was narrow, just big enough for someone to crawl through. My flashlight illuminated a filthy sleeping bag surrounded by crumpled food wrappers. A small flashlight, the kind you'd find at a hardware store, lay near the sleeping bag, its lens cracked. Backing out of the closet, I slammed the small door shut and grabbed my phone. My hands were shaking as I dialed 911 and explained what I'd found. The dispatcher assured me an officer would be sent over right away. I sat on the couch, gripping a kitchen knife, while Luna paced nervously near the hallway. When the police arrived, I practically ran to the door to let them in. Two officers inspected the crawl space while I stood in the hallway trying to calm my nerves. One of them emerged. "Looks like someone's been staying here," he said. "Probably coming and going through the vents or an unlocked window. Did you notice anything missing?" "No, but someone's been in my house, right? Living here?" "We'll check the area, but whoever it was, they're not here now." That wasn't exactly reassuring. The police didn't find the intruder, but they found signs of forced entry on one of the basement windows. The thought of someone inside my house, watching me, listening to me, was almost too much to bear. I stayed at a friend's house that night, unable to bring myself to sleep in my own bed. The next day, I called a contractor to seal off the crawl space. He bolted the panel shut and reinforced the basement windows with heavy-duty locks. I also installed motion sensors in every room. The contractor believed it was likely a transient person looking for shelter. He tried to make me feel better, saying it wasn't uncommon for older homes to have hidden spaces like mine, perfect for someone to hide in. But his words did little to ease my fear. For weeks, I avoided the hallway closet entirely, even though I knew it was sealed. I still think about that crawl space sometimes, about how close someone was without me ever realizing it. I'd been renting that small house for about 6 months. It wasn't much, but it was perfect for me, a quiet place to focus on my grad studies. The backyard was small, bordered by a tall wooden fence that separated it from the parking lot of a nearby supermarket. I liked the ambient sound of the cars or shopping carts behind the fence. It was just enough to remind me I wasn't completely isolated, but private enough to feel like my own little world. Most evenings, I worked late into the night on my thesis, enjoying the silence. That evening was no different. I'd been glued to my laptop for hours, papers and coffee mugs scattered across the kitchen table. The only sound was the rhythmic tapping of my keyboard. Until it all stopped. The power went out so abruptly that for a second I thought I'd blown a fuse. My laptop screen became the only light, plunging the rest of the house into silence and darkness. I sat there for a moment, waiting for the power to come back, but the house remained eerily still. Grabbing my phone, I turned on the flashlight and got up. The beam of light swept across the unsettling dark walls. I'd dealt with power outages before, but this one felt different. It wasn't stormy, and I hadn't overloaded any circuits. I looked out the window and noticed the streetlights were still on. So why was my house the only one without power? The circuit breaker was in the basement. I hated that basement. It was unfinished, with exposed pipes and a low ceiling that made it feel claustrophobic. The wooden stairs creaked under my weight, and the air grew noticeably colder as I descended. I reached the bottom and swept the flashlight around. The usual clutter of paint cans and old tools greeted me. I moved toward the breaker in the far corner, near the old boiler. Then I saw it. Behind the boiler was a figure crouched low, completely still. For a moment, I couldn't move. The flashlight's beam shook in my hand and my breath caught in my throat. The figure shifted slightly, and the light glinted off a pair of wide, unblinking eyes. His face was pale, his clothes dark and ragged, blending into the shadows. He was close, too close. Who are you? I managed to stammer. My voice barely sounded like my own. The man didn't answer. He just stared at me. Then, without warning, he bolted. He darted around the boiler with a speed that startled me, heading straight for the back door, which I hadn't even realized was ajar. The sound of his footsteps echoed as he disappeared into the night. I stood there, frozen, the flashlight trembling in my hand. I didn't know how long I stood there before my legs finally moved. I slammed the basement door shut and locked it, leaning against it for support. My hands were shaking as I fumbled with my phone, dialing 911. The operator's calm voice made my own panic seem even more overwhelming as I explained what had happened. There was a man in my basement. He ran out through the back door. The operator assured me that officers were on their way and instructed me to stay somewhere safe. I grabbed a heavy flashlight as a makeshift weapon and sat in the corner of the living room, my eyes glued to the backyard. The minutes stretched on like hours until I finally saw the red and blue lights of a patrol car pull into the driveway. One of the officers stayed with me by the door, reassuring me as the other descended the creaky stairs. The sound of his boots echoed ominously in the silence. It wasn't long before his voice called out, "Got something!" Moments later, he reemerged holding a black duffel bag, its fabric dusty and worn. "Do you recognize this?" he asked. "No, that's definitely not mine." He set the bag down on the floor and unzipped it. Inside was a mess of items, electronics still in their boxes, wallets, and even a few pieces of jewelry. Seeing the contents made my breath catch. It didn't take a detective to figure out what it was. "It looks like your basement's been used as a storage spot," the officer explained. "Stolen goods, most likely." Stolen from where? The supermarket next door, by the looks of it, he said, looking over the items. This is typical for thieves. They'll stash recently stolen goods in a spot where they think it won't raise suspicion, then come back later to collect them once things cool down. But a basement? That's bold. I've never seen someone use a private residence like this. My home, my safe space, had been turned into a hiding spot for a thief. How long do you think he's been doing this? I managed to ask. The officer shrugged. Could be days, could be weeks. Hard to say, but judging by the number of items here, he's been at it for a while. I felt like the floor beneath me was shifting. How many times had this person crept into my home? How often had I been upstairs, completely unaware that someone was moving around just below me? The second officer emerged with more evidence: a dirty blanket, an empty soda can, and a crumpled fast food wrapper. Looks like he was spending some time down here too, he said. He might have been using the basement as a spot to lie low between jobs. The officers finished their inspection, securing the evidence and promising to keep an eye out for anyone matching the description of the man I'd seen. They assured me they'd increase patrols in the area, but their reassurances felt hollow. The next morning, I called my landlord and he came by with a contractor. They replaced every lock on the property and sealed off the basement door with a heavy deadbolt. Motion sensor lights were installed in the backyard, and I scheduled an appointment to get a security system installed. It helped, but only a little. A few days later, one of the officers called to follow up. "We've identified some of the items in the bag," he said. "Most of it was stolen from the supermarket behind your house, but a few pieces, like the jewelry, were reported missing by customers shopping there." "Have you caught him yet?" I asked. The officer admitted that they hadn't caught him yet. "But we're working on it. Cases like this aren't uncommon, but I'll be honest, it's unusual for someone to use a basement like this. Most of the time, they stash things in public places, like dumpsters or abandoned buildings. Your house must have seemed like the perfect cover." The thought sent a shiver through me. How many times had I unknowingly made it easier for him? Leaving the basement door unlocked, not noticing the faint smells or small signs of intrusion. I'd chalked it all up to an old house and a busy schedule. Over the next few days, I tried to go about my routine, but it was impossible. A week later, I decided I couldn't stay. The landlord was understanding, and I moved into a small apartment closer to campus with better security. It wasn't as spacious or charming, but I needed the peace of mind more than anything. The scariest part wasn't just that he'd been there. It was that I hadn't known. And if it weren't for the power outage, I might never have found out. If these stories made you double-check your locks, hit that like button and share with someone who loves a good scare. What would you do if you found yourself in one of these situations? Let us know in the comments. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And don't forget to subscribe for more chilling tales. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.